Welcome to Dicamus,
episode 3, featuring Robert
and Ruff. Today we're here with our science, or upper school science teacher, Mr. Jacobs, and we're going to be talking about how to deal with new technologies as Christians and what we accept and what we reject in our society. And so first we would like Mr. Jacobs to just introduce a little bit about himself.
Good afternoon. My name is Josh Jacobs. I am the upper school science teacher. I'm also the lead teacher of our rhetoric school, and I have taught at NCA for 15 years. I have a master's in teaching and an undergrad degree in biology. I've also done a little bit of work in research and as well as done some tree work in my past. So I'm excited to talk to both of you today and glad that we can meet and talk about these ideas.
Okay, our first thing that we wanted to talk about is things concerning AI. And our first question is, in general, how do you see AI impacting the future as a whole?
That's a great question. You know, I think it's something that we as a faculty have talked a lot about. As a culture, we've talked a lot about it. When I talked with my formation group, what they said was, the end is coming. The robots are taking over. That's what it's going to be. And I don't think that's where we're headed. I think a lot of things with AI, the things that I worry about most are in the short term. When I think about for students have a lot of pressures on them. I think today it's a harder time to be a student than when I was a student. And one of the reasons for that is because, one, the distractions that are out there, they're pushed at you more aggressively. Mm-hmm. And then with AI, it's also being pushed at you pretty aggressively as a student. So in other schools, you're allowed to use AI. It's part of the process of writing. You can use it for other parts of it. You know, our school has taken the idea that we really don't want you to do that because we want you to both be growing in your ability to think and write. And we're worried, at least at this point in the game, AI is going to short circuit that process. So one of the things I worry about when I think about AI, I worry that for students who have been told, don't use this, you're actually being tempted to cheat in a way that is much easier and in a different way than any generation in the past has been tempted to do so. If I wanted to cheat on a paper, I would have to go convince somebody else who's taken the class to give me their paper. I would then have to copy it in a way that I wouldn't get caught and it was similar or different enough, or I would have had to copy it off of the internet. Mm-hmm. For you, your little Google Doc thing has a little star on the top there that's asking you to press it all the time and say, go, use me. And I worry that's going to shortcut some of the development that you have. And it's a temptation that's there that others didn't have. So that's one of the things I worry about with AI. In terms of big picture stuff, I think I was talking with a friend about this, and he reminded me that AI is an exponential process. And that means it's really hard to predict. So anything that I would say of, you know, long term, where is this headed? Because it changes really rapidly and exponentially, who knows exactly what it's going to look like? I think we need to be careful with how we approach it, though.
I didn't even know that star thing was there. I didn't even know what that was.
What does it do?
Oh, I think that's the Gemini assistant on Google Docs. So it's Google's AI.
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay. To be able to ask questions to.
Yeah, it's really crazy how much or how easy it is to get AI. It's on Snapchat. They force you to have a little AI bot personally. I hate that it's there. I try to take it off every once in a while and it won't let me get it off of my friends list, and it's really annoying. But the next question we were wondering was, what part of our lives do these new advancements take away from or add to?
Well, let's take a step back. When you say you want it off of Snapchat, I think it's worth thinking about, what is the technology doing to us? Mm-hmm. So look at Snapchat in general. When you think about Snapchat, why does it exist the way that it does? How do you use it and how is that shaping you? More often than not, when we engage with technology, we don't think about the way it's forming us. Mm-hmm. So I, as a science teacher, can convince myself that YouTube videos are a great thing for me to be watching, because I could maybe show them to my class later. And there are some cases that is true. Some cases where I'm just picking up a vice of being distracted when I should be doing something better. And then there are ways that by being on YouTube, my attention span changes. The way that I think about scientific studies change. The way I think about entertainment change. Mm-hmm. And that impacts how I communicate, both for good and for bad. So when we think about AI, we need to think about how is this going to impact and change me as a person? Mm-hmm. So what are some of the ways that this particular technology is going to shape me and change me? In terms of like, what is that going to do for you for good or bad? I don't actually know the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I wish I did, because it's brand new. I worry that it's going to shortcut you in the sense of you're going to be able to find shortcuts to things that you probably should be doing for yourself. It kind of feels like you're going to the gym and having a robot pick up weights for you and thinking that you're getting stronger. I'm worried that's what AI is doing when the way that we use it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things we think about is like, what could be a good use for this? I look forward to the day that I don't have to teach students how to make graphs. I think that having an AI to make the graphs for us, and so we can do the process of thinking about what is this saying, what are some of the conditions of the study, how is it set up, what is some of the analysis of that. I think that's better than learning how Excel runs, though you could still make a case that those are good skills to have in general. Overall, though, I'm not totally sure what AI is going to do to us as much. And that's part of why I think we should be cautious with how much we engage with it, especially in an educational context.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think our school can set up rules to guide the use of AI?
You know, one of the things that we like believe a lot as a school is that education, when we look at our education, we're trying to think about how is it that as humans we are growing in virtue? So as a faculty, we talk a lot about intellectual virtues. So when you think about AI, how could we use this well? I think that when we look ahead to the future, trying to navigate where are the places where we're going to grow in our ability to parse complex information. I think we could use AI for that. I think being able to, especially in science class, and maybe even some math class, being able to pull in some of these models to be able to see, okay, what can we pull from this? Play around with it as a tool to use. I think using it for writing papers, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. So I think using analysis for a paper or something where we're trying to engage you, right? Like you guys are reading East of Eden right now. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask East of the ChatGPT to write you a paper about East of Eden, Mr. Volley makes you read that book. What has he told you why you're reading the book?
I mean, first of all, for our history or for our literature and history class, we're doing American history and literature, and so we're trying to find the great American novel because it's discussed so broadly about what is the novel that defines being an American. And so firstly, we're going through and reading books of literature that are set in discussion for the great American novel and deciding if we believe that it can be considered that. But East of Eden is also a moral lesson for us. Me especially, I've seen a lot of growth in myself, at least being able to be formed. I've seen a lot of like ability to process what it is, because I see myself in the characters and the struggles that they have. But I think that Mr. Volley partially just really loves the book and wants us to read it, but also that it can shape us and make us better Christians and more willing to serve God.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that, you know, when you think about like the great American novel, you have to ask yourself, what does it mean to be an American? And by spending time writing about that, thinking about that, and wrestling on your own is going to be so much more valuable than asking Google, asking ChatGPT, what does it mean to be an American? What does it mean for me to have my parents who live in this particular suburb? What does it mean to be an American? And how do I engage with my country and what that means? And then how does this book get to part of that vision or not part of that vision? But like the wrestling with that happens in your mind, but also in writing. by having to write, you have to think about what that's going to look like. You know, the same with the moral framework. How is it that I'm struggling with either the sins that I see on display in this book and the brokenness that's there? What does it mean to be part of a family? What does it mean for redemption to happen or not to happen? Those are ideas that require wrestling. And one of the best educational tools we have to wrestle is writing. And so using something like a generative AI to do that writing for you, our worry is that you're not going to do the wrestling. That's why we don't want you to use it for those sorts of assignments. And right now we're being a little bit more cautious and saying any assignments, right? Why are you studying calculus? You're not studying calculus so that you can go build rockets. You're studying calculus because hopefully you're ordering your mind in a way that can solve complex problems, parse it into very specific ways, and see a beauty and wonder in the calculations that are there. Using PhotoMath to take a picture of a problem and it's spitting out the right answer shortcuts all of that. So we're gonna say, no, not for now. Maybe some point in the future you could use that. But we wanna, right now, be shaping your mind so that you can become the sort of person that can use this sort of technology and it not corrupt you and shortcut you, hopefully.
Now we're going to start, we're gonna switch gears to talking more about things that we've talked about in biology class this year, and we'd like to focus on like genetic engineering.
Yeah, at least me personally, I've been really interested when we have talked about genetic engineering and what it means for us. But specifically, I was wondering, how do you think that gene engineering affects, in humans, affects the image of God?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. And to take a step back, I actually don't know a ton about AI. I know a little bit more about these things. And yet this question, I still don't have a great answer for, right? When we think about God's image in us, we know that we are made in God's image, that as humans, we are filled with the image of God. We also know that we live in a fallen world, right? So when we started the year, we looked at the three different poems in AP Biology. So we looked at the Pied Beauty, where Gerald Manley Hopkins is talking about the glory of God's creation and how that's revealed in the colors and the different places that he sees. And we compared that with Ralph Waldo Emerson, essentially worshiping nature. And then on the other side, a Herman Melville quote where he asks, like, who froze my teamsters, my horses in the prairie? And that's, we start the year with that because we recognize that the world is a balance between our fallenness and the fallenness of the world and the perfection in which it was created. And so when we look at genetic engineering, because it's a human-inflected process, there is no perfection that is going to come through that. So to say that like the image of God could be made better or worse through genetic engineering just isn't true, right? The image of God is found in us, and we can reflect that image better and worse. But to do that, we have to become more like God. And that means following him and knowing him more, be more filled with love. So I'm, in terms of just the question in general, I would never say that like we are somehow decreasing the image of God by genetic engineering or increasing it. It is something that as humans we just have.
But like, wait, so I get that, and maybe not the image of God, but do you think it at all is not right to do just because it's changing the way God originally created us? I guess that's more like what the question was kind of meaning, in a way.
I think when we wrote it, that's what we were thinking, but I do like your answer about that. But do you think that it changes the way that for how God intended us to be created?
I guess let's I'm going to ask you guys a question then. So is plastic surgery a good thing or a bad thing? Does that affect the image of God, or how would you relate to that?
I don't really know. I think that's really interesting because it also, I think, depends on how you're using plastic surgery, because I think that sometimes I've never thought of it as wrong and like changing how God intended us to be created. Maybe I did. But I guess I've usually thought about it in cases where like someone has or was like in a fire and had some disformity then, and so it helped them look normal again. And that's a really hard question to answer, if that is morally right, because God has a plan for us in everything that he does. So I don't know. That's a really hard question. I feel bad asking you that now.
No. I think actually it's the right sort of question to be asking, mm-hmm. right? So let's take two cases. Somebody burned in a fire. We would say that it is good that they get plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. Or someone born with a cleft palate where they can't chew, they have a hard time speaking. Mm-hmm. Fixing that through plastic surgery and reconstructive surgery is wonderful, right? Mm-hmm. That is mirroring how God makes broken things new and whole again. Mm-hmm. And like we're acting in the right way in those cases. We also see that there's plastic surgeries that just exist to further vice, right? Mm-hmm. To create impossible standard and only feed into lusts or envy or jealousy. Mm-hmm. So in that case, we see it could be both. When we look at genetic engineering, I think it's similar. There are mm-hmm. all sorts of cases where this would be awful. Really, really, really bad. Whenever we think that we are going to make people better, we're under the assumption that we know what a good person is in terms of physical traits. And I don't think we actually know that as well as people think they do. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if we're going to be curing cancer with genetic engineering, mm-hmm. if we are going to be looking at medical breakthroughs towards trying to stop something like MS or Alzheimer's, something along those lines, there's a chance that that could be really beneficial. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the unintended consequences of mucking around with people's genes is big. Mm-hmm. So how are we doing these studies? Are we experimenting on babies? Because that's not okay. Are we experimenting on human embryos? Where are those embryos from? Those are embryos or people. If those embryos are people, that means that we're doing something bad. So the question of, like, in general, is genetic engineering good or bad? It's maybe good, maybe bad. But the path towards editing humans, I don't see any way that you do that without doing all sorts of evil. So I don't think that it's something that we should be pursuing mm-hmm. outside of some very, very, very limited confines of maybe something like you're looking at curing cancer in an adult where the trait can't get passed on to the next generation. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But even then, there's still a lot of work to do to know, would that be right? Would that be ethical? And then how do we set those rules? Who's setting those rules? Mm-hmm. Should it be our government? What if other governments don't follow that same rules? It's why I teach biology, is because I believe that we need you two, not just to study biology, but as we approach the future and you guys are becoming people who vote, I want you to know about these issues and know about them as Christians, to think about who should I be voting for? What sorts of policies should we be looking for? And then I want you two to be the ones in the decision-making places. It's part of why I think education is a good thing, because I want young men and women who are Christians to be in places where they have both the knowledge and the influence to do good in the world, and that good is tied to the vision of a Christian good. And so it's why I get excited about all the biology stuff that we talk about. Even though I am not going to do genetic engineering, right? I'm not going to be on some governmental panel that's going to make these choices. But I hope that you guys might someday. And even then, I know neither of you right now are like, yes, I want to be a biologist. I want to make those sorts of policy decisions. I know that this is going to be an issue that's going to come in your lifetime. And so you having some education about this now hopefully shapes those questions that you have when it comes to things like votes, when I'm a senile old man and you guys can be standing for Christ, standing for the people who are made in the image of God, and against turning people into objects or thinking we're somehow only things.
Okay, coming back to the fact that gene editing on humans isn't something that we should be pursuing because of it not being ethical in the ways it comes about or on the reasons that we do it. But do you think there's a time where it's ethical to do it in other species other than humans for any science that could come about?
Yeah, I think mice are pretty safe, right? I think that, you know, the question is why and in what cases, mm-hmm. right? So there's something called a gene drive. I don't know if we talked about this in class, where you can hypothetically create a gene that copies itself inside the organism mm-hmm. and make it more likely to pass down. So there was a group of people who thought, what if we engineered mosquitoes with a gene drive that eventually spread a mutation that killed all the mosquitoes and we wipe out the species? And most people go, that's a really bad idea. Like creating something that could perpetuate itself. What happens if it jumps into another organism? You know, that's the sort of like apocalypse scenario, that sort of thing. So I would say, I still think it's okay to do some genetic engineering to figure out what's happening, but the amount of controls you need to place on that rises substantially. Mm-hmm. So the likelihood that something jumps out of the lab rises a lot. Like we talked about the Mirror Life paper where a group of scientists said, hey, it is hypothetically possible, though not yet possible, to create organisms that the proteins are made of the left-handed version or the right-handed version. And if that happened, it could lead to all sorts of bad consequences. Let's not let that happen. So I appreciate with science that there are people who are thinking through what are some of the consequences of these actions. Let's put guidelines in place to make that work. At this point, I'm not ready to say stop all mm-hmm. engineering or allow all engineering. I think you need to look at what are the risks, where is this happening, what are the controls put in place.
So there's a lot of stuff about gene editing, about like parents modifying what their kids will look like. And that is a really hard question to answer. But how do you think that will like affect our future? And is that something that as Christians we should allow?
I don't think that's that hard of a question to answer. I think the answer is just no.
Well, the things that you've been talking about like, is it okay to gene edit? And in some cases, yes, some cases, no.
I mean, I think to trust that the desire to do that reflects how little we think of our differences, mm. right? We look and we say, I want to be more tall. I want to be having this eye color or thinner or stronger or a face that's more symmetrical or something like that. We inherently look to others and say, I want to be like that. But we forget that like God made us different, and mm-hmm. that difference exists not just because of brokenness in the world, that all of us have been made with different gifts and talents. We're not all eyes. We need each other. We need to be able to say, I need what you have and you need what I have. So the moment you start saying, let's change the genes so that we're all the same, we're turning to eugenicists, and we don't actually know what's the good, the you in eugenics. We shouldn't be trusted with that. So I don't think we should ever allow people to be changing, especially things like, what do they look like? Where is that coming? Anything that would be passed on to the next generation.
Yeah, I think that's really important as Christians too, saying that like God created the church and how the church is the body of Christ, and how each of us have differences and we're used in different ways to work in God's favor. Like some of us are the hands and some are the feet. And that the differences of the mind are still like the embodiment of differences in the physical world, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that we just worry about why am I not more like that person, instead of thinking about how God could use us and the gifts that we have.
Okay, thank you for talking with us about AI and gene editing.
It was really interesting for me. I love it when we go on little side talks in biology. I think it's so interesting just to learn about the things that are going on in our world that I really don't know about. I look forward to learning more in class about all these things that happened and why they happen and how different things that come about affect the things that we learn and the things that we do. But thank you so much for taking the time to do this with us. This has been Dicamus featuring
Robert
and Ruff. Thanks for listening.